The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of Natural Bridges Media or KSQD's staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to...
Welcome to What a Week. It's been a couple weeks since I, Eric Nelson, have been on the airwaves, but I'm joined here by the esteemed...
Brad Gava.
Editor of Good Times and now a frontline warrior against the concrete excrescences that are dotting the landscape of Santa Cruz. I'm definitely putting words into your mouth, Brad, but we'll dive deep and spelunk into what you just wrote about the impending demise, if they get what they want, of our beloved Catalyst. Besides that, we're going to deal with Whiskey Pete Kegseth, or Hague Seth, which is where he should stand trial. Senile Satan, of course, Botoxy Barbie, and her latest gang of goons and ice hires, the what I call the Trump Edifice Demolition Act of 2029, Olivia Nuzzi, and so much more on What a Week. Woo, barely got all that in. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so as I said, a lot's going on, and we'll start local. What is the expression?
Think local.
Think local or act local and think globally. I think at this point we should act local and think globally. But regular listeners of What a Week will know that I've been railing against the concrete toadstools and workbench and what's been happening for the last couple of years, and was always told to, well, can't fight City Hall, to which I would answer, no, you can fight City Hall. You might not win, but you can fight. And there's sort of a flashpoint here, and it really seems to be a flashpoint, Brad, that there's certain things that are beloved in Santa Cruz, the staff, the Giant Dipper, the surfer guy statue, what can we say, a couple Mexican restaurants, Palomar, you know, let's talk about local institutions. The Del Mar Theater, the Rio,
and Las Palmas.
We're going into an entire another edition of What a Week here. And the beloved Catalyst. And when plans were unearthed that, well, you know, we're going to build something around and we're going to change up. We're going to futurize. We're going to right-size the Catalyst as part of a development. People went nuts. So you wrote a great sort of call to arms or an alert. So why don't you tell people the few people who don't read Good Times, I know there's a couple people out there who don't read it, but what did you have to say about all this?
Well, let me go back in my history for a minute. I came to Santa Cruz to go to the Catalyst, and who was I seeing? Every Friday, I was seeing a band called The Ducks with their front man, Neil Young.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, that weird Canadian.
And it was so exciting to me that, you know, I don't know if anybody remembers, but you had to wait in line around the block, and then you had to quack to get your tickets, and they never really said it was Neil Young and the Ducks.
And this would be 1977, folks, not to call your age here.
Yeah.
But, you were young. You were in utero at that point.
I was. But it was so amazing to come into the Catalyst. So since then, in 65 years of the Catalyst, I've seen so many great shows there. I've seen Pearl Jam rehearse for their tour with the Rolling Stones, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Rage Against the Machine. I mean, go down the list. It's been a lot of great shows. B.B. King, my last B.B. King show was there. So what's happening now? They are planning to build a 7-story, 65-unit or thereabouts apartment complex on top of the Catalyst while claiming they can also keep the Catalyst.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Those lines around the block. Let's just say Neil Young live or Pearl Jam rehearsal or any act playing loud music. And then it'll be the noise ordinance. Everything needs to shut down at 9 o'clock because the senior citizen assisted living rent. Oh, we didn't know we rented out the floor over the Catalyst to an assisted living site, et cetera, et cetera. So
well,
that's going to go.
That's the thing I don't get. Who in their logical mind could think a club like that, known for loud music, could possibly have residents above it? It just doesn't work. There's
How about
math.
An insensitive developer who thinks they can do anything whenever they want, who've been incentivized by loosely drawn laws and a mayor and a city council that is sort of just blowing in the wind and giving up mealy-mouthed excuses to what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera? That would be my highly biased, opinionated answer to that point.
And I'd sure like to know, I mean, just looking at that one thing, the sound, I'd like to know anywhere in the country where people are putting residences above a rock club or a music club.
Because guess what? They're not. Yeah. The Catalyst will become if you go through Newark Airport, there's a CBGB's there at the airport, which has all the faux, fake stuff on the wall. The Catalyst would, you know, speaking of assisted living center. The point is, it's just the audaciousness. You know, there's such a linkage, and maybe why I'm so emotional about this is in my own backyard. And what they've been doing is not unlike what senile Satan did with the East Wing of the White House. We can do it, we can get away with it, and we're just going to do it, right? And these things were rammed through. Yes, there was appropriate hearings, but everyone's been hiding behind the law, hiding behind obscure statutes, whereas other cities have opposed it and are fighting it tooth and nail. We've just sort of, and they propose these nonsensical, 16-story clock tower building, which everyone knew was nonsense. I'm sure they had their plans for the 8-story they wound up building already there, but we'll start with 16, and then we'll grudgingly go to 12. Oh, okay, we'll be at 8, which, of course, was what they were planning to do from the beginning. Do they really think people are that dumb?
They are. I mean, unfortunately, thanks to shows like this or the good times, I mean, people can speak out. But really, unfortunately, people don't have the time for this. Do you go to a 6-hour city council meeting?
Well, the place to go, and we've been on this for quite some time because, you know, my esteemed associate and mentor and spiritual father, Harlan Ellison, used to say, you know, being informed is not enough. You have to be well informed. And a great website to really get into the weeds of this, including where to go and where to protest, is on Facebook, which is Santa Cruz Against Runaway Development. Santa Cruz Against Runaway Development. Right now, I think it's the only thing on Facebook worth doing. That's a pretty broad thing. Facebook is such a slum now next to Twitter as far as something that's just been wiped out and has turned into nothing but real semi-pornographic Nazi reels on Facebook. But by God, that website and that Facebook page is great, and there's things to read. Now, if you don't agree with it, that's fine. That's where if you're informed well, join the debate. And I checked this morning, there's, I think, 2,500 members now who are following this site. And you shouted it out in your Good Times editorial.
Yeah, well, got to start somewhere, and I'm really happy that got things going.
But what's interesting about this, Brad, is that you shouted it out, and I've checked it out. You know, I read it just to see what's going on. And a couple people said, and you should be proud, I read Brad Kava's amazing article, and it mentioned your Facebook page, and that's why I'm here. I'm joining my voice. Well, so, you know, parenthetically, you know, I had being obsessed with the senile Satan, this issue has kind of troubled me. And I had an experience. I was at Dominican Hospital attending to a family member for the last couple weeks. And I had this epiphany. I was standing kind of as one does in the hallway, and I overheard a couple of healthcare RNs, you know, the lifeblood of our community, talking. And I overheard one of them say, well, I'm doing a double shift, but I have to drive from Gilroy. And it's an hour and a half sometimes drive for me to get here. And then after my double shift, because they're understaffed, I have to drive back. And I thought, man. And then I read somewhere else that next door, across, you know, there's Dominican and the not necessarily ideally located cemetery across the street. Up towards Chaminade, they're trying to construct another toadstool complex.
Yeah, we've had letters about that in Good Times. People are upset.
But something came to mind. You know, if we can't stop these things, if we can't fight City Hall, maybe we could suggest to City Hall, how about healthcare workers, firefighters, cops, the actual people who keep, who are trained, who aren't paid enough, who are forced to work double shifts because they aren't paid enough, who literally save our lives and protect us, how about they get, quote, affordable housing, like 30% off whatever the rent is, 50% off. You're an RN at Dominican, you know, you come down. Let Dominican, who's having, you know, funding crises of their own, and they don't have enough space, and I can vouch for that, you know, at least they can get and encourage more people or cut the commute time. You know, if you're in a hospital, do you want to have an RN who just was stuck on Highway 1 South or North for an hour and a half coming in to do the double shift? No, you want them to kind of roll out of bed and be there in 10 minutes. If something happens, God forbid, another earthquake or fire, wouldn't you like your police, firefighters all based on the ground? Now, I'm throwing this out as a utopian idea, but why not?
No, I think it makes great sense. They talk about affordable housing, and this would be one way to apportion it and make sure that the right people are getting affordable housing who need it the most. And I'd throw in their teachers, too.
Teachers, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Teachers, because these are the people. To be honest with you, and we talked about this in the, you know, we spent hours, Brad Kava, prepping for these shows in the 3 minutes before we went on air talking about this, is who are, you know, you mentioned, you know, those lights were on in these things. Well, I've noticed that they're putting out ads, cutting rent, giving first and last months free, trying to grab people in. So I'm not sure how many of these things that they built are occupied. What's the average rent? What's the demographic of the people living there? Is this really affordable? How do the rent go up to over the hill? Just simple, basic metrics that might inform people as to what's going on. And if we can't stop these things from being built, maybe there's a chance to at least populate a portion of them with people who we need in our community.
Can I put in a plea for listeners who live there to write me so I can work? I'm working on a story about who does live here and how much they're paying and how it compares. Brad@weeklys.com. If you live in the new buildings and you're happy or unhappy, and drop me a line, because we really want to cover this. Because the lights were all on the other night. I was shocked how many.
Well, they might have just been testing them out.
I don't
know. We don't know. The point is, we honestly don't know. And I have to say again, we have a disclaimer at the top of these What a Weeks. If the people living there are working in Mountain View for Google, designing new and improved AI excrescences, and they like to surf, and they can afford to have a place here, and they don't mind 3 times a week clogging Highway 17 to go to work, I'm not wildly sympathetic with that. And I'm not sure that these ugly things that no one argues aren't ugly, should we be building more of them to house people like that? If that's not the case and they're actual people, but I can tell you the nurses who I overheard at Dominican, they ain't living there. They can't afford to live in one of these places, and they're precisely the people. And you're right, teachers, firefighters. Who are the people, the caregivers? Who are, as Mr. Rogers said, the people who help? They're the ones who should be housed there, and if we have any kind of a progressive city or a mayor or any kind of constituency, or let's say the editor of a well-known beloved newspaper, to take this up and just ask the questions. Because, you know, yeah, we couldn't stop the East Wing from being bulldozed, but by God, in what I call the Trump Edifice Demolition Act of 2029, every single thing that this guy touches, the gold is pried off the walls of the White House, the labels are off. You know what the latest, Brad, is that he just signed another thank you for attention to this. They're no longer going to allow free entry to parks on Juneteenth and Martin Luther King's birthday, but they will on Trump's birthday.
It's amazing what they do right in our faces. Just the they don't hide it.
Well, the thing is, though, there's, you know, collective the word of the year, according to, where is it? I get the figures here. The word of the year for the Oxford word of the year is rage bait, which should be a good subtitle for What a Week here. You know, if you're frustrated, as we all are, with what's been done in our name, and we'll be getting into more of that later, and you feel powerless, well, right in our backyard, there's things going on that should be protested, analyzed. We just should not let them get away with it. And if they've gotten away with it, then how about we put people in those places who we need in our community? End of rant, end of editorial. All right, music. You're a musician. I know you're going to go into a band rehearsal. Steve Cropper, ladies and gentlemen, you know, the man. And guess what? I'm not going to play Green Onions. How about that? I'm the only progressive FM music guy who's not playing Green Onions. I'm going to play an instrumental from an album called Dedicated, A Salute to the Five Royals. And this is Steve Cropper. This is late Steve Cropper, because you always think, oh, Steve Cropper, yeah, a lot of great... He was in the Blues Brothers, right? Whatever happened to him? Well, he kept working. So this is a Steve Cropper instrumental. And I shared this with a friend of our radio station and friend of mine, Richard Thompson, another great guitar player, who wrote back saying, I have never heard this. What a guy.
Tell me the name of that album again. Where can I get it? What is it?
It's called Dedicated, A Salute to the Five Royals. The Five Royals had an ace guitar player, so they did a tribute album to the band, and that was Steve Cropper, but that great tone.
So clean.
So clean, and just, you know, Steve Cropper, he knew, like Richard Thompson, knows what not to play, right? You know, but he's not one of
those
guys.
Now, let me ask this, because you might know it. Has he ever played with the Dead?
Cropper?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I know he certainly backed up Neil Young, you know, Booker T, you know, that the Dylan, I think they were introduced at the Dylan 30th anniversary concert, where that was the house band. Neil said, well, I'll do it if the MGs are my house band. Speaking of Dylan, because I never miss a chance to plug something, next, what a week time, 11 to 2 next Saturday. 3 hours with Sean Willits, a Princeton professor who, wait for it, wrote the album notes to the Bootleg Series Volume 18. picked by Dylan to write the album notes. I repeat, we're going to go deep into that box set for 3 hours, playing the music and talking about it. So it's going to be a musical odyssey that only KSQD, who is allowed to play music on the radio, can pull off. So what do you want to talk about? Anything cross your transom?
I think the big news of last week that hasn't gotten enough coverage was when Elon Muskrat released who all these accounts are, where they're all coming from.
All the Nazi sympathizer accounts that infested.
No, they're American patriots. So they're American patriots in Lithuania.
Well, one man's American patriot is another Nazi sympathizer, especially on X. But I understand.
Right.
What you're saying, they're not American patriots?
Something like 80% of them were from out of the country and obviously funded by Putin or China. Or I don't know who, but they're all there pretending to be Americans, as they've been doing really for the last 8 years, and riling us up. And he took it down. Unfortunately, I think, talk about regulation, because the same thing's going on at Facebook. I know these people all look legitimate, I fight with, but they're not. They're all in other countries.
No, again, with the exception of Santa Cruz Against Runaway Development, there is like no FaceTime site worth doing. Well, this brings us to something we like to do in this show.
Thrush, the technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity.
So, yeah, Nazi adjacent. So Palantir was formed by a strange guy named Alex Karp, who once, I have heard this narrative before, once was a Democrat and now ... So he did the New York Times, their annual deal count. They do this big New York Times splashy, all the movers and shakers, and Erica Kirk, who closed the show. Erica Kirk, who we were on, maybe inappropriately, but right after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, I was saying, watch for Erica. She is really good, and she's lusting for power. We'll maybe get into a little of that later. But Alec, do you remember when Tom Cruise jumped the couch on Oprah, that video?
Mm-hmm.
You've really got to see the video, and I'm sure you can find it, of what Alex Karp is doing when he's talking. But this is one of the members, new member of Thrush, right there. And this is how this guy talks.
When I made every decision Palantir made, FDA's going public, building products, enterprise, large data sets, going to government, acknowledging American superiority, being pro-meritocracy, launching an AI platform, calling into question that AI models would actually be able to perform without orchestration. Every single one of those was viewed as stupid.
And viewed as stupid for good reason. I would view it as evil. The guy can't even complete a sentence, but what he's attempting to say is basically every single evil trend in the world, we're jumping all over and going to monetize. So speaking of jokesters and sociopaths, yes, Elon Musk, AI, he's got Grok now. This is a guy, when you think comedians, you know, Elon Musk, if you want to, again, go on YouTube, check out the Elon Musk and Dave Chappelle when he went on stage and tried to tell jokes in front of Dave Chappelle's audience. Let's just say it did not go well. But here's Musk talking about Grok as the life of any party.
If you want to have a good time or like make people really laugh at a party, you can use Grok and you can say, do a vulgar roast of someone. And Grok is going to be an epic vulgar roast. It's going to be crazy. That's why I say, like you said, what's the future going to be? It's not going to be a conventional phone. I don't think there'll be operating systems. I don't think there'll be apps. It's just the phone will just display the pixels and make the sounds that it anticipates you would most like to receive.
I mean, seriously, you know, so the life of any party. I mean, really, the future is being designed by these people, and the gloves are off. I mean, they absolutely are four square for Musk is not even attempting now to use his – he doesn't have his only voice is the inside voice, and that voice is inside the Third Reich, if you want to be
Science fiction's becoming science fact. You got Robbie the robot. You got Hal. 40, 50 years later, these things are coming true that people had imagined, and it's worse and as bad as could have been forecast.
Yeah, but you know what? They're not going to be able to, I'm sorry, play a guitar like Steve Cropper. and art will survive in what I call is bespoke reality. Bespoke reality is the stuff that is guaranteed to have been crafted by human hands, written artwork, music, live performances. Those things are going to even have more and more value. You know, again, I try to be a little cheerful in this show. If you think about when Kindle came in, everybody thought, well, that's it for books. You know, who's going to want to buy a book? Well, last time I walked into Bookshop Santa Cruz and saw it packed with people, or Bad Animal, or what is it, Angry Birds? What's the other good?
Two Birds.
I like Angry Birds, but Two Birds. But three great local bookshops, they're doing just fine, thank you. And I'd recommend everyone go down there and buy an actual hardcover book from an author you respect at a brick-and-mortar bookshop, as far as making you feel good. So what I'm saying is AI is incredibly troubling. I mean, Terminator, anybody? But what are we going to do? So what else do we have? Well, yes, I referred to Whiskey Pete Hegseth, which is where we hope he winds up, who is definitely stepping on every available male appendage right and left because, wait for it, he's an ass clown. But this being totally shocking was, as it's coming out, Washington Post, give Jeff Bezos credit, reported that they not only blew up a ship that they're not even sure was running drugs or had. They've never been able to produce any evidence of that whatsoever. Then there were two survivors, and they waited 41 minutes to decide what to do with them and then kill them, basically live. And first, Hegseth, who obviously was in the room, said, "Hamina, hamina, hamina, yeah." And then, well, no, and then pointed at the admiral in it. And, of course, the right-wing mockosphere. This is I call her Paulina Luna, a.k.a. Lunatic. This is her take on this.
I do understand, though, that it might be shocking for people to see footage of narco terrorists being blown out of the water. No, I don't have sympathy. This is called governing, and we are going to do what we need to do to keep the American people safe.
And, you know, yeah, because they're running the boat that was not even heading to the United States, that was not containing fentanyl. The senile Satan referred to it as hundreds of millions of, no, that was Botoxic Barbie. We'll get to her in a second about, yes, yes, Mr. President, you saved the lives of 100 million Americans by blowing up the non-fentanyl carrying boats. But Megyn Kelly, remember her? So she has outdid herself. She's the one a couple weeks ago, I think the last one a week, she was saying, well, you know, pedophiles, the statute of limitations, you know, 14 and up is probably okay. It was trying to equivocate that. Well, this is her latest quote on the execution of two civilians, and they've not been able to document. This is what Megyn has to say.
So I really do kind of not only want to see them killed in the water, whether they're on the boat or in the water, but I'd really like to see them suffer so that they lose a limb and bleed out a little. Like, I'm really having a difficult time ginning up sympathy for these guys.
I'd like to see Megyn Kelly suffer. But let me add this. We can blame them, but you know what? When history looks back on all this, you and I and every listener here is just as responsible, just as every supposed good German in 1933 was responsible for what happened because they didn't step in and do something about it. I feel the blame on this. I feel like I'm partly a murderer.
We've been sinned again and feeling blood on our collective hands, but we didn't vote for this. The United States in general did. So, no, I don't feel, you know, when the Nuremberg trials come through, let's just say, Brad, take a number. We're going to be maybe number 311 million. I think there's a few people we can work through first, which is, you know, the aiders and abettors of this. And the excuse, though, because you can just see where we're heading on this. You know, this is Trump wants to be Duterte of the Philippines. Remember Duterte, whose whole thing was let's kill all the drug dealers. And that's who Trump models himself against because he's obviously, you know, I'm just going to start spitting in invective here. But let's hear for herself. So this is the other topic A was Trump versus someone's incoherent press conferences or people ushered into the fake gold-encrusted Oval Office where he was asked about the Somali issue because now they're turning their attentions to that. Tim Walz, you know, absolutely stand-up guy. He's turning his sights to the Somalians. Well, see if this is racist much. This is Trump on the Somalis.
Somalians ripped off that state for billions of dollars, billions, every year, billions of dollars, and they contribute nothing. I don't want them in our country, I'll be honest with you, okay? Somebody would say, oh, that's not politically correct, I don't care. I don't want them in our country. Their country is no good for a reason. Their country stinks, and we're going to go the wrong way if we keep taking in garbage into our country. Ilhan Omar is garbage. She's garbage.
Trump said that, by the way, flanked by, this was his do away with the last of Biden's electric car initiative. So he was surrounded by CEO of General Motors, Ford, you know, basically the who's who planet-killing, environmentally destroying people, and not one of them, like, walked out of the room, said anything. He just brought this up as they're all standing nervously saying, now, what's he on about? But Ilhan Omar, what do you have to say about what Trump said?
I would say the president's obsession with me and the Somali community is really unhealthy. It's creepy. And I hope that he gets the help that he needs.
Now, Hakeem Jeffries, so he, you know, what do we look for our Democratic leadership, Brad? You know, what's he going to say? So issues of the border came up, this topic A, about demonizing immigrants, demonizing brown people, basically. So let's see how top Democrat in the House of Reprehensibles, how he fielded this question and what he thinks about what Trump has been doing on the border.
The border is secure. That's a good thing. It's happened on his watch. He wants to claim credit for it. Of course, he'll get credit for that. In terms of making sure that we actually deal with the issues that matter, including on immigration or beyond, there's a lot that is left to be desired.
What the hell is he talking about? I mean, this guy, you talk about being primary. This is what we've got. Somebody wrote, I wish I'd wrote this. It said, nobody's more disgusted than I am by the argument that Dems are just as bad, or even by the idea that they can be assessed by the same metrics. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't criticize them harshly. Dems like Jeffries are clueless, useless oafs. Republicans are monsters. Very different things.
When you listen to him talk about the Somalis, it's just like Hitler. Just put Jews in there.
It's the same playbook.
It's the exact playbook.
It's the same playbook. But again, yeah. Reasons to be cheerful is that, you know, Trump's brain is literally invisibly leaking out of his ears.
But all the people around him.
But even that, though, it's a central, you know, there's layers of this. You've got, you know, there's the, I had on What a Week last year, Andy Dehnart, who writes a great publication called Reality Blurred. It's basically been going on for 25 years. It's the Bible of reality television. So this guy reviews everything. And I had him on solely to discuss Trump season 2, the presidency, as a reality show, which is entirely what Trump is doing. And, you know, it was pretty clear he was casting that echelon of reality stars, you know, the tattooed Whiskey Pete Kegseth, robotic Pat Bondi, Botoxic Barbie, Christy Gnome, you know, he's cast a front line of idiots, incompetent oafs to run things. And the only saving grace is they can't, you know, there is, I'm sure, an evil, if not evil, agenda of, you know, power, you know, the whatever the Republican equivalent of a George Soros, which I don't buy at all. There's sort of an imperative of, if it puts money in our pocket, we'll support it going on here. But as far as the front line of this government, and we're going to get to, well, we can maybe do it now. You know, they did, this was the monthly last week, What a Week. And by the way, I'm Eric Nelson.
Brad Cava.
We're sitting here unpacking the fabulous week. But every month they assemble the cabinet and they all try to outdo themselves in genuflecting in front of the senile Satan. So let's start with, Lutnick or Nutlick? I'm not sure what his name is, but this is Nutlick praising the man.
I was working on transition with President Trump, right? To build the greatest cabinet ever for the greatest president ever. And I, as I sit here today, I can't be more proud of how you did it, sir. You've created the greatest cabinet. It is a joy to be at this table.
And by the way, Trump actually dozed off, nodded off. There's a great picture of Rubio genuflecting, and Trump literally is sound asleep. But don't, let's not, this is Botoxic Barbie Christy Noem. She's an expert. This is a two. You'll like these, Brad.
We're going to have hire our 10,000th ICE officer. Will be on the job within 10 days. So we have hired 10,000. We've had hundreds of thousands of applications.
More on that in just a second. But this is my favorite moment. This is, you don't like this one. This is, again, how do you top that?
Sir, you made it through hurricane season without a hurricane.
Yeah.
And so FEMA, you kept the hurricanes away. So we appreciate that.
Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life.
So, yeah, welcome to that. And then, not to be outdone, Roger Marshall, Senator Roger Marshall.
But I can tell you, my interactions with the president, I'm a pretty hard worker. I'll work 100, 110 hours a week. He outworks me. He's the first person I've ever known that works harder than I do. He runs around that golf course. He goes through staff members, you know, several groups of them each day. He is in incredible shape right now. And you talk about sharp. He's playing four-dimensional chess right now, with time being that fourth dimension.
So time, we're getting into a Star Trek country here, you know, time being the fourth dimension.
And golf being work.
The problem with the Nazis wasn't simply that their leaders were evil, psychotic men. They were. But the main problem, I think, was the leader principle.
They call me a Nazi all the time. I'm not a Nazi. I'm the opposite. I'm somebody that's saving our country.
Well, James T. Kirk is never wrong. Brad, I think we need a musical break. And we're not done with Steve Cropper yet. And again, this isn't the traditional stuff. You're, again, a musician. You know that Alex Chilton, what's that sound? Big Star. So guess who played guitar on a Big Star record, a Big Star cover of a Lou Reed song? Steve Cropper. So again, when we talk about playing off the beat and at Steve Cropper sound, this is a great obscure bit of Steve Cropper. This is Big Star. This is Eric Nelson.
Brad Kava sitting in.
Yeah, no, you're already leaning forward because you want to hear Big Star do Lou Reed with Steve Cropper on guitar. So you ask, you will now receive.
It's true, 'cause everybody knows.
Unusual collision there. Lou Reed, big star. Steve Cropper, heroin probably somewhere in that mix. I don't know.
But, who was singing?
I think one of the big star guys. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, probably Chilton. But yeah, strange and interesting cover. This is What a Week with Eric Nelson.
And Brad Cava.
And we're sort of mulling over the events of the last week. Botox Barbie talked about all the ICE hires. So... only rivaled, perhaps, by Good Times, Brad Cava, editor of Times, is the Daily Mail, you know, as far as influence and reach, except they're politically toxic, a total right-wing tabloid based out of the UK. But they did an article last week, this is the Daily Mail, about, you know, the headline is, on the $30 billion new ICE hire initiative. And basically they're saying that total novices are being fast-tracked into this, surprise, surprise. A 469-pound man was sent to the academy whose own doctor certified him not fit at all. They're apparently, the vetting process is so rushed, the officials didn't even wait for drug test results to come in before sending them out to harass people and flying them off to Georgia. Some of these new hires do not even have to report to field offices before they get sent to the academy. They're given 6 weeks of training, shortened from the standard 16 weeks. And a lot, according to a DHS official on off the record, a lot of these background checks aren't being done till after these people have reported for duty. Does that reassure you here? I mean, and of course, Nazi Ferrato is getting what he wants, which are these goons hired. But these are not, let's just say, the best and the brightest who are being, and there, somebody said, this isn't the Department of Baking Cookies. This is the Department of Homeland Security. And now we're employing people who are not equipped to tie their own shoelaces.
Yeah, I don't consider them to be federal law enforcement officials. They haven't had the training. They don't have the morals. They don't have the ethics. They don't have anything we expect in law enforcement. And you watch these videos, which I watch at least a few a day. They're disgusting. The people are arresting a guy going in. Well, most of the people, a lot of them they're arresting, are going in to do the right thing, to work on their green cards, to meet with judges.
Well, it's an obscene, toxic version of TCA security theater. This is about, you know, taking your shoes off still. You know, I mean, it's performative. The ratio, I think it's, what, 3% of the people that they've arrested actually have any kind of a violent crime record. It's just... to, sadly, and the reason that some of the videos are being populated is to rattle people like us, you know, to demoralize us, to throw us off balance, to make us give up. Now, the good news is that's precisely the opposite that's happening. But people are filled with fury and obviously Trump's support. But still, 39% still support this guy in this administration.
Yeah, I cannot understand that, except, again, I know it's cliche and you're not supposed to do it, but I go back to 1933 in Germany and we are just reliving it.
Well, we're not. I mean, again, the analogs are there, but they're not there. You know, the thing is, this is our own brand of, you know, Germany, to try to reduce the hour we spent with John Parshall, military historian, about the real analogies. You know, Germany lost World War One when they're on the edge of winning it. All of a sudden, they were winning the war and they lost it. Then the Depression hits. Then Germany. Then Hitler, an amazingly charismatic guy who harnesses, that's one analog here, knows how to use the media of the time for his efforts, you know, fills the vacuum and says what Germans want to hear. Let's undo the Versailles Treaty. And oh, yeah, it's all the Jews' fault, you know, and took over. It's not an analog today. What I see, though, is the, you know, thrush, the technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity, who basically seeded all of this. The rise of the internet, disinformation, memes, you know, just the idea that the the illiteracy of Americans and their susceptibility to this ongoing sewage of propaganda allowed this to happen. And then some guy comes in who's trained as a reality TV host who figures that out and is a charismatic guy. He's got that thing going. Though, again, that's leaking out of his ears. So the optics are not great.
But at the core is racism and cruelty. They love the cruelty and they hate the races.
Well, they always have. And that's, you know, that's look back at the, you know, Barry Goldwater. Look back at Nixon, you know, when Johnson in 1965 basically rams through the Great Society and the Voting Rights Acts. And as soon as he signs it, he turns to probably Bill Moyers and says, well, Democrats just lost the South forever. He knows what that means. You know, the Civil War never ended, and these people are taking advantage of it. Well, one thing we'd like to do is the Trump dump of the week, where guests. So this is a couple things from various press appearances from the senile Satan that sort of illustrate what I'm talking about, the brain leaking out of the ears. So let's listen to this one.
I took my physical. I got all A's, everything. But they said to me, would you like to take a cognitive test? I said, is it hard? And then I read in the New York Times, is Trump sharp? Trump is sharp. But they're not sharp. That's why they're going out of business, the New York Times. I hear that they're losing so much money, it's ridiculous.
Of course, utterly divorced from reality. Total, just along with the, I think yesterday said, gas is $1.99 a gallon. It isn't anywhere. I think the cheapest it is, and I'm looking at Oklahoma, like it's $2.20 a gallon. Certainly more expensive here in the People's Republic of Santa Cruz, but it's not, no, just flat out insanity.
That is, they just make stuff up and their people believe it, don't question it. They're not educated enough to use Google or to use any valid news source to establish the truth.
Well, let's speaking of third world S-holes as countries, as Trump did, watch him have fun trying to pronounce foreign dignitary names.
President Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of the Congo and President Kagame of Rwanda. They are amazing.
I mean, the sing-song voice in the pauses, when I, you know, edit these things down, it's so easy because the long gaps and just the incoherence, you know, wherever you come in, you know, we'll talk about our beloved Grateful Dead in a moment, but it's sort of like, you know, a bad, you know, disconnected space jam.
And if you watch that one on video, one of those guys was glaring at him like, who is this fool?
Well, he did get, though, the FIFA, the only organization as corrupt as the Trump White House. He got the, Lifetime Peace Golden Achiever Award. It's the kind of thing where, you know, second graders get it in second place when they don't win the thing. Everybody's a winner.
I picture the FIFA meeting where they say, okay, let's give him this award. And somebody says, no, he's not going to fall for that. He's not that stupid, is he? Well, yes, he is.
Well, the thing with that is they should just be giving Trump awards daily now. Let's just keep inventing awards that he can do. You know, let him micromanage the ballroom, which the Trump Edifice Demolition Act of 2029 will destroy on day one. You know, Democrats inaugurated January 21st. The wrecking ball goes on the 22nd. Down it comes.
And Fox is already doing that, as are the other networks. Melania's Patriot of the Year? I saw he was Patriot of the Year before that. And in her Patriot of the Year speech, thanking everybody, she plugged her movie and her new production company.
Well, we'll talk about that. Let's talk showbiz news in just a sec. I'm going to leave you with this, though. This is, if I was J.D. Vance, I would be getting a little nervous here.
Look, I think the man's a grossly incompetent man. I thought that from the day I watched J.D. destroy him in the debate, I was saying, who is more incompetent, that man or my man?
Once again, that's Trump on who's more incompetent, that man or my man? And then J.D. Vance is just sitting there with that kind of sickly mascara, looking for a nearby couch. We'll leave it at that.
And bless him for, in the campaign, calling Trump Hitler. He was the first one to do it on their side.
They retracted it.
Yeah.
Well, as we talked about, you brought up Melania Trump. So another thing that happened last week is that the senile Satan has forced David Ellison, the hemorrhoid-lipped fail son who is now running Paramount and Skydance, to greenlight Brett Ratner's Rush Hour 4, a movie that absolutely nobody wants to see. And Trump got it greenlit because Brett Ratner, who, if you remember, was driven out of Hollywood for multiple grotesque violations in the Me Too adjustment. A total, what's the word, pig. So guess who's directing when Jeff Bezos gave Melania $40 million for the documentary that absolutely nobody in the universe wants to see? Brett Ratner's directing it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, good news, you know, I have a rotating list of Satans here, but David Zaslav, who I had firsthand experience with back in my days working for the Discovery Channel, I was an early adopter of this guy being an absolutely soulless piece of S-word, who then wound up moving like they always do, the Peter Principle on steroids, failing up and then buying Warner Brothers. And then, of course, the whole scheme was how do we could line his pockets even further. It's not that he's making $51 million a year last year. So he put up Warner Brothers for sale, which is always the end game. And everyone was convinced that Paramount, who enjoys the largesse of the Trump administration, was going to nab it. Well, Netflix stepped in. Netflix allegedly is buying it, and we'll see what happens. And this is going to drag on for 12 months. But we're living in a world where you're saying, ooh, the good guys, Netflix, you know, who are not necessarily the good guys, though they were founded in Los Gatos, ladies and gentlemen. But Skydance didn't get it. But Paramount already has whining and complaining and saying, of course, it's an unfair playing field. And the idea that the son of Larry Ellison is complaining that the world is unfair to him, I'll leave you that participle dangling. I mean, give me a break. I mean, come on. But anyway, that was news from last week. But it's going to take at least a year for this to go through. And all ultimately is going to happen is Zaslav is going to sell it off. He's going to pocket at least $300 million and walk away. And this guy is, as I say, just all he does is eviscerate, eliminate, you know, sound like Johnny Cochran here, but just not a good guy. And we'll be keeping an eye on as that sale goes. But rest assured, Trump, because remember, Zaslav controls CNN. So that's something that Trump wants to do away with as fast as he can. Grateful Dead, you brought it up when we were off mic. It's something that is sticking in your craw around our favorite band. And coming up in 8 minutes, the Grateful Dead Zone.
Thursday, December 4th, they had a celebration for, quote, the first Grateful Dead concert, which took place in San Jose, which was actually the day after a Grateful Dead show here in SoCal. But they weren't called the Grateful Dead when they played here. They were the Warlocks. They changed their name the next day. So they're billing this as the first Grateful Dead show, and they brought out a lot of people, including Trixie Garcia, and they have a plaque at City Hall, which was built over the where the Grateful Dead had played on the house of Ken Babbs, I think.
But the interesting thing, the house, the actual house, was moved. The house still exists. I have the address. I checked it out on Zillow. $1.3 million for the Victorian with six bedrooms. Actually, not that I have a lot of time on my hands, but I did this research. But let's go back in the Wayback Machine, because go with me, Brad. It's the night of December 4th, okay? You start at the Berklee Community Theater, and you're going to go over and you're going to check out the sound check for Bob Dylan and the Hawks. They're playing the Berklee Community Theater. 1965, Bob Dylan and the Hawks. Doesn't get cooler then. Okay, I'm going to go catch a show now. You're going to go to the Rolling Stones, who are playing in San Jose, which is where the signs, the posters you talked about, that they put posters for the acid test outside the Rolling Stone concert so people would come out of the Stones and say, oh, let's check this out. Then you go down the street and you go to see the Warlocks, a.k.a. the now newly named Grateful Dead. That would be a good night of entertainment.
I mean, there's tons of it in those eras.
But that night, though, I'm serious.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't get that. That's like, you know, that's a lineup that, you know, Dylan and the Hawks, the Stones, and the first Grateful Dead acid test on the same night in a 30-mile radius in the Bay Area. That's a pretty cool night of entertainment.
No, it's great. Any one of those would have satisfied me. To see three of them would have been amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're towards the end of this.
But hold on. Let me cut you off.
Yeah.
Do you count that, or would you call that the first Grateful Dead concert?
Yeah, it was the first concert where the Grateful Dead was on a poster. where they went by the name of the Grateful Dead. They publicly proclaimed themselves as the Grateful Dead. They put the posters on the telephone poles outside the Rolling Stone concert. Yeah.
Okay.
And the fact is, the cool thing is the house is still there. I'm not going to give the address over the phone, but you can actually go to the house. Now, why they didn't put the plaque where the, you know, at the house is beyond me, but I think we're going deep into arcana here. Well, I did promise that I wouldn't play any of the I wouldn't play any of the greatest hits from the great Steve Cropper, but I lied. So we'll go out with a Steve Cropper classic, where he's name-checked, by the way, name-checked. And there's a lyric here that I always wondered about. This record came out in 1967, and it has the line, "I was educated at Woodstock." Wait a minute. Woodstock was in 1969. How could that line? It turns out that Woodstock was an African-American school that one of the members of this dynamic duo went to. So that's the Woodstock they're singing about.
Just learned something new.
Yeah,
I mean, it.
See, what a week. What can I tell you? You can't be well-informed unless you're informed well. So Grateful Dead Zone's coming up in just a few minutes. Brad Kava, remember, Santa Cruz against runaway development. We can't say that enough. Santa Cruz against runaway development. Facebook.
And write me at Good Times, brad@weeklies.com. I want all of your opinions about this development, about the train, which we haven't talked about now, but what's going on in Santa Cruz? We love your letters. We'll print them.
Well, you know, Brad, you know, there's that great moment at the end of Casablanca where Bogart shoots Major Strasser, Ingrid, you know, and they have the tearful farewell where Victor Laszlo gets on the plane. Welcome to the fight. This time, I know our side will win. So welcome to the fight, Brad Kava. And we'll go out with the great Sam and Dave. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you. Nice to be here.